we are talking about the impact of Alzheimer's today on caregivers. If you're living with Alzheimer's or dementia in your family, what has it been like? The biggest challenges? And are you getting the support that you need? And with the number of Alzheimer's sufferers expected to balloon in the coming years, are we as a society ready and able to care for the coming wave of patients? Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We are, of course, on Facebook and Twitter as well, at Radio Boston. Well, joining me now in the studio are three people with a lot of personal and professional experience with the issue of Alzheimer's and caregivers. I'm joined by Nicole McGarren. She is the Director of Patient Services at the Alzheimer's Association, the Massachusetts and New Hampshire chapter. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you.
Also with me are two caregivers. Rob Epp cares for his partner, Jordan Lassoff, in Holderness, New Hampshire. Rob, welcome to you.
Thank you.
And also with us is Jackie Lustig. She lives in the Boston area, and her mother lives in the dementia unit at the Falls at Cordingley Dam in Newton. Her father also lived there until he passed away from Alzheimer's in 2006. Jackie Lustig, thank you so much for being here as well.
Thank you.
Nicole McGarren, if I could just start with you. We just briefly heard the story from Patrick and Lynn Scannell. How common is it for family members to be the primary caregivers for Alzheimer's patients?
It's extremely common. There's about, we estimate about 15 million family caregivers across America providing about 17 billion hours of care to people with Alzheimer's disease. If we paid for that care, it would cost about $202 billion.
And I understand that when you look at all care given to sufferers from Alzheimer's, about 80% of it is coming from families or friends or unpaid caregivers.
Absolutely. There's a huge number of family caregivers out there, predominantly usually women providing care.
So this is a disease whose day-to-day care is being experienced almost exclusively in people's homes.
Absolutely.
Okay, and therefore has a huge impact on their lives. Rob and Jackie, if I could just, if we could hear a little bit from you, can you tell us a little bit about your partner, in your case, and your parents, but Rob, about your partner and what life is like today?
Sure. Jordan and I were in Seattle when he first was diagnosed with onset of Alzheimer's. And we decided to move back to the East Coast, where a lot of family is, because we realized we were going to be facing a long fight and we needed people around us to help us. And so it's really the two of us who are on the front line, and we have support from a number of different groups.
But if I understand correctly, Rob, you had to leave your job in Seattle in order to move back to out to New Hampshire.
That's correct. I worked at Microsoft Corporation when we were in Seattle, and when we were going through the process of figuring out what was wrong with Jordan when we started to see symptoms, it just became too much to handle all the medical appointments and everything, so I left Microsoft. We figured out what was going on. We got a diagnosis of Alzheimer's, and then we moved back to the East Coast when we understood what was happening.
Now, for you, what impact has that had on your life? I mean, obviously, there's the impact of your partner having Alzheimer's, but having to make decisions like leaving your job in order to care for him.
Well, leaving the job, I think that decision was fairly easy because the importance of what was going on in the home trumped anything outside of the home. Clearly, the financial impact has been substantial, and so we've had to deal with that.
How are you getting by financially then?
Well, we had to think a little creatively. We're sort of scraping by in some ways, but I've started an internet business, which gives me a lot more flexibility with time, and looking to start a few side businesses to put together income from a few different places, plus investments. And so we're doing okay, And that's good.
But just so I don't get stories confused here, your partner Jordan is living at home with
correct,
you.
Correct. Okay. We want to keep him at home as long as possible, simply because his quality of life is better there. And so the quality of care that I can provide at this point is the best way to do that.
Jackie Lustig, your situation is a little different, or a lot different than Rob's. It's your parents, now your mother, who has Alzheimer's. Can you tell us a little bit about them?
Sure. In the late 1980s, my parents had moved to Florida to retire. That was their plan. But by about, I would say, the mid-1990s, my sister and I, up here in Massachusetts, when we would talk to my father, began to notice that he was having a lot of difficulty remembering words. And at the time, we didn't know anything about Alzheimer's, and we attributed his word recall problems to probably he had had a mini stroke, because he had some history of heart disease. But finally, we took him to the doctor around 2000, and the doctor, actually, it wasn't a cardiologist who came out, it was a neurologist who came out and said, your father has Alzheimer's, and oh, by the way, your mother as well. So that was pretty devastating. My parents were pretty functional at that point and moved with some assistance from myself into an assisted living facility down in Florida. But as time progressed, they began to decline further. A couple of hurricanes hit Florida, and it just totally threw them. Hmm. And then finally, by 2005, my sister and I realized they just couldn't be 3,000 miles away from us, and we moved them back to Massachusetts, not their plan, but they agreed. And then we looked at various assisted living facilities and decided on the one in Newton because it had a dementia unit where they could get much more care. Dad passed away in 2006, which was difficult, but in some ways actually easier because now we just can focus on my mm-hmm. mother. And she's very advanced Alzheimer's now. She doesn't know my name. I think she knows I'm her daughter. And we can't really have conversations, but we listen to music together, which that's her one pleasure. So we really enjoy listening to Benny Goodman together.
And for you, I mean, obviously, it was, as you said, it was not how your parents had planned to come, you know, to Massachusetts. I don't imagine it's how you planned it either. I mean, how is your family getting by financially, and how has it changed your day-to-day experience?
Well, it wasn't what any of us planned, and it's a role reversal where my parents were very proud and independent people, and now the roles are reversed where I'm the parent to my mother, yet she's not a child. She's my mother, so I have to treat her with respect. So emotionally, it's a reversal. It's difficult. Financially, we're doing okay because my father had the foresight many years ago to buy long-term care insurance, uh-huh. spell out his wishes. So that's all been good, except that the policy that my mother has recently ran out. So now we're dependent on Social Security and what my father left her, which will be good for the next 4 years. She could probably stay where she is. But after that, if she's still alive, I don't know.
And if I may ask, how much does it cost?
Well, my mother's in a very nice place, which was my parents' wishes, and it's $10,000 per month.
$10,000
a lot of
month.
Money. It's a lot of money. She has round-the-clock care.
Listeners, we are talking about Alzheimer's and its impact on caregivers. It's the conclusion of our special series, Fade to Darkness, The Age of Alzheimer's. You're hearing stories from several caregivers who know what it's like on a day-to-day basis. If you're one of them, give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. What does it cost you? What does it cost your family? What are the challenges you face? And are you getting the support that you need? Again, we're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Nicole McGarren, so we've heard from both Rob and Jackie about, first of all, the financial impact. It just seems to me that high-quality care, if you can't do it at home, as Jackie's saying, you know, in order to afford it, it costs $10,000 a month. How is it that people are able to cobble together the resources, if they can't do it at home, to pay for such care? Or can they? It must be tough.
It is tough. And I would say it's not the majority of people I work with that can afford to move to an assisted living level of care, which for most people is what they would prefer. It's a lot more residential. It's more home-like for people. But a lot of people, if they can no longer provide someone care for somebody at home, need to move to a nursing home facility because once their assets are depleted to a certain level, the state will pay for that level of care. But there is no one's health insurance covers, you know, living in an assisted living facility or for paying for that kind of care at home.
So we have a huge number of caregivers who are falling into basically a massive gap then financially.
Yes. I mean, a lot of people really have very, very few choices and I think end up, in a lot of cases, providing a huge amount of care at home for maybe longer than is safe for them at risk to the caregiver's health.
Rob Epp, you know, I read that about half of all caregivers at least have part-time or full-time employment, aside from the 20-plus at least hours that it takes to look after their loved one at home. So it's like having the equivalent of two, if not three, jobs. So on that note, tell us a little bit of what your day is like. How is it that you have to organize yourself and Jordan to get through a day?
Well, a day for us is a little bit different because, like many other Alzheimer's patients, Jordan starts a little bit early. He finds that the morning is an easier time, so he's up usually around 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning that early. And we're lucky. He's still able to prep himself in the morning so that he can get up and get going. And so my morning starts a little bit later after his. He does things by himself where it's quiet. He goes outside. He bakes, which he can still do, and a number of tasks before I even get up. And then we kind of lay out our day to make sure that he has coverage, especially as the day goes on, when things really kind of start to fall apart in the afternoon. We have caregivers who come in. I make sure that I'm around during those times. I'm usually around also for the meal preps because that's something that's a little bit more hazardous sometimes. And so we want to make sure that he's covered.
You know, as Nicole said, that sometimes caregivers, because they want to keep their loved ones at home or are unable to send them to a facility, keep them at home past the point where it's possible for them to actually provide the moment-by-moment care, because I understand. I mean, we're talking about things like helping people get in and out of bed, bathing, maybe changing diapers if necessary. I mean, listeners can't see you, but you look like a strong guy.
Oh, yeah. It's all of that and more.
So you're already having to do that for Jordan, some of that for Jordan, sure.
We're lucky. He's sort of mid-stage, and there are some things that he needs help with, but there's some things that he can still do himself. Like a lot of his personal care is still something that is fairly easy for him to do. And we've sort of laid out lists and reminders. So having a routine is really critical as things progress. And you find little ways in order to make it possible for someone to stay on track with things that they sort of took for granted at one time but can't any longer.
Mm. Jackie Lustig, if I might swing to the other end of the spectrum, do you have children?
I do not.
You do not. And so it's you and your
My
partner?
Husband,
you
yeah.
and your husband.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I've met over the course of the week, I have met people who, in caring for their loved ones who have Alzheimer's and also who didn't have children. In fact, Lynn Scannell, who we heard from at the top of this segment, said that she never had children, but now she does because her husband is, mm-hmm. the dementia sort of slowly peeling away the aspects of his character. And I wonder, does it feel that way to you, that it's a kind of care that you never expected to give but now are?
Absolutely. As I said, both my parents were very independent, bright people all their lives. That's how they raised me and my sister, to be independent in all ways. So now having to make all decisions for my parents about their care, all the financial decisions, not what I expected, but I will tell you, it's a labor of love. And the way I view it is my parents took care of me for 21 years. This is the least I can do to help them.
Well, we have a lot of callers who want to join us, so I want to get as many of them in as I can. Let's start with Barbara, who's calling from Marlboro. You're on the air, Barbara.
Thank you for taking my call, and thank you for having this very important program. I called because two essentials that I feel so strongly about. My husband had Alzheimer's for a period of about 7 years, and he died 2 years ago, which for him was absolutely a blessing. But as far as the financial aspects are concerned, it is just so important to have long-term care insurance, which will pay for so many things, such as the Adult Day Health Program. It pays for a good portion of the assisted living if someone goes into that, and then down the line if you need it for nursing home care. Mm. And also for the caregiver themselves, I do not understand how anybody could get through this terrible period without being in a support group.
Mm-hmm.
Support groups are just essential because you find people who are in the same position as you are, as close friends and close family as you have. They never they're not there with you. Whereas in a support group, all of the people know exactly where you are, what you're going through, and you're not reinventing the wheel.
Barbara, thank you so much for your call. I'm apologizing for having stepped on you there, but I actually want to get to a couple of other callers who echo some of your thoughts. Jim is calling from Cambridge. You're on the air, Jim.
Thank you. Yeah, I just wanted to follow that up by saying how much my wife, Julia, and I appreciated the support group that Alzheimer's Association set up, where we could both go to a joint meeting and then separate into the two groups. We're dealing with the same set of issues from two different perspectives. And that was just enormously helpful to us. Julia and I were dealing with her Alzheimer's for 5 years. It actually turned out to be Lewy body dementia, which is closely related, when they did a brain analysis after she died last year. But I was really glad that we were able to for her to stay at home. It took more and more time mm-hmm. for me to help her with the things as she lost more and more function with bathing and dressing and undressing and everything. But I, too, was glad that we got a long-term care policy set in place, I don't know, 15 years ago, that gave a lot of help with reimbursing some of the stuff for home health aides and for a day program that we went to at Rogerson House, which is another wonderful facility.
Jim, thank you so much for your call. I'm going to stop you there because I want to be able to have our guests respond to some of the points made. Obviously, we've heard several times the importance of getting long-term care insurance. But Nicole McGarren, people have to have, like Jackie Lustig's father, the foresight to do that.
Absolutely. I mean, once you get a diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease, it's too late to get long-term care insurance.
Hmm. I also want to ask, I've read that amongst caregivers, I mean, we heard about the importance of support groups, that over time, because of the unrelenting nature of Alzheimer's and the fact that it may last, you know, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, no one really knows, depending on the patient, that up to half of caregivers suffer some form of depression over time. I mean, Rob, have you experienced a little bit of that?
For sure. It took a while for us to really work through the impact of the diagnosis. And so getting help from groups was really a key way to sort of get past some of the initial depression. And that was not only talking to other people who were in the same circumstances, but also getting help from doctors. And the two of us kind of suffered through that at different rates for different reasons. And eventually we got to the point where things settled down. It took a few years for that to happen. And we have in place now the things that we really need. We find that groups or connections through the internet are really critical to be able to maintain those ties with people who are going through the same thing.
And Jackie, when you first discovered that you had not one but two parents with Alzheimer's, I guess a big question for me and maybe some that listeners are wondering is if this were to happen to them, even with one parent, how do we know where to go first? I mean, did you know what resources to look for?
I really didn't know back a decade ago. And then I just somehow I went onto the internet. I got to Mass Elders. And through Mass Elders, I got to Mass Alzheimer's. And that's how I got information that helped our family.
Nicole McGarren, we've just got a couple seconds left, but I do want to get your expert opinion on this. The number of Alzheimer's patients is expected to at least double in the coming years. As a society, are we ready for the wave? Do we have adequate caregivers, adequate support?
I don't think we do right now. I do think that the state of Massachusetts is making some efforts to deal with this oncoming huge number of people with Alzheimer's disease. We're currently working with the legislature to pass a Massachusetts Alzheimer's Project Act, which would help people to identify the resources that your callers have been mentioning that are so helpful to them.
Well, listeners, there's a lot of links to other resources, some of which you've heard here. They're all at WBUR.org. Look to the Fade to Darkness link. Nicole McGarren, Director of Patient Services at the Alzheimer's Association, thank you so much.
Thank you, Magna.
And Rob Epp and Jackie Lustig, thank you so much for coming in and sharing your stories.
Thank you.
Coming up next, the last in our series on a day in the life of a Somerville couple dealing with Alzheimer's. You don't want to miss it. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty with Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.